now convening the City of Portland budget hearings. And there is a budget statement that I'm required to put into the record. It is lengthy, so I am not going to read it into the record. However, there are printed copies available here. It will be on the website tomorrow, and I'm just going to give you a few brief highlights that I think address some of the questions that people have raised during prior public testimony on the budget. First of all, with regard to homeless services, we are making record investments in homeless services. It is an increase from 10% over last year, actually 11%. We are making record investments in homeless prevention, in emergency shelter to keep people out of the elements, in transition from shelter and the street into housing, into services that help people to get off and stay off the street, including mental health services, addiction services, job training, and other opportunities. And I think one of the most interesting and exciting parts of the homeless services budget is that we are making a significant new and record investment in the transition between shelter and housing. And we've been told that that's been a significant gap for the chronically homeless population that I think everybody here is aware continues to grow on our streets, and it's a serious issue. And therefore, I believe the budget needs to reflect that, and so the final proposed does that. Some of you were here for community centers. I still expect the Parks Bureau to come forth with a strategic plan focused on community centers, future capital investments in those centers, and how we are going to pay for that. But if you are here tonight because you want to save your community center, you get to go home, if you so choose, because all of the community centers are restored in the final proposed budget. They all have ongoing funding. So they are not up for consideration for reduction. They are not up for consideration for cuts, at least so far as the proposed budget goes. You may wish to stay if you would like to make a statement and make sure that the city council supports that move. But you know, I'll just be honest. I haven't heard anybody say they don't. So, Commissioner Fritz?
I just want to add, and also is the funding is also there for the vision plan, so that we don't want you to go home and not come back. So we will need to have a discussion, and when I say we, I mean we, the city. The mayor is currently the Parks Commissioner, and he will reassign the bureaus next week. But we all, as Portlanders, need to talk about what services do we want in parks and how do we want to pay for them. And so the mayor's budget does fund the process to do that. And so the Parks Bureau will be getting those invitations out over the summer, and that's a conversation which will be difficult and which we hope you will participate in. And so that we're not back this time next year in the same kinds of situation. But thank you to everybody who came out.
In addition, there will be new revenues in this budget through multiple sources. We will be bringing an ordinance to the City Council around commercial trash hauling rates. As I think everybody here is aware, there is a increase in the business licensing tax from 2.2% to 2.6%. That raises about $15.3 million of ongoing general fund support for the budget. In terms of the housing, we're currently investing in more than 700 newly affordable housing units that are currently constructed or will be completed in 2018. By the end of 2019, we're actually going to nearly double that to an additional 1,322 units. That is supported through this budget. Just by way of a benchmark, that will be five times more than the amount of affordable housing that was generated in the year prior to my arriving. We are committed to the Office of Rental Services. This budget will allocate a little over $2 million to the establishment of the Office of Rental Services. It creates a rental registration system. It'll provide quality data on the rental market, including rent increases, evictions, security deposit data, and more. policing. This is always a controversial issue. I have been very clear that I expect the police bureau to be more responsive to the kinds of needs that are currently on our streets today. That is why we are making record investments around mental health through substantial new investments in the behavioral health unit. We are I'll explain that in a minute. We are also doubling the capacity of our partnership with Central City Concern through the service coordination team. There are currently 6 beds that are available. We are increasing that to 12 beds that will be available. Homeless advocates in the community asked that the police bureau include a position specifically designed with somebody with lived experiences to help advise the police bureau on policy, on tactics, on interactions with the homeless community. This is an important issue. We are funding that position. There have been lots of calls for additional training, particularly implicit bias training and de-escalation training. That training is included in this budget. Finally, accountability is very important. There have been a couple of audits that were released recently that suggested a lack of data collection, a lack of data transparency, and a lack of accountability. I have therefore included in the budget data analysts and internal auditors. And in addition to that, I have fully funded the auditor's request for an additional complaint auditor. So if people make complaints against the police bureau, there will be additional capacity. I believe it's doubling that capacity, but at least it adds a completely new person dedicated to that particular duty. There will be more officers to reduce response times and to reduce overhead spending. When we fund the police bureau on overhead, that takes general fund dollars away from other services. So there is a staffing imbalance, and I intend to address it. I also want to be very clear. This is my first budget as mayor. The last one was a carryover from the prior administration. I have committed to making our bureau more responsive, more accountable. I brought in a leader in Chief Outlaw who I think could partner with me to do that. This is just the first step, and I hope that you will give me the room to actually continue to demonstrate my commitment to being responsive and accountable and relevant and responsive to the community that we serve. So I think I will stop there because really I want to hear from all of you. I do want to say one other thing, because I heard some people hissing, and again, I'd really rather we abide by just thumbs up or thumbs down. I can see you up there, too. By the time somebody living on our streets who is struggling with mental health issues is having an interaction with a police officer, our community has already failed that individual. And I want to be really clear about that. There's a lot more that we need to do upstream. And I would go so far as to say our nation and our state and our community, while there's a lot of really good people doing amazing work here, both in terms of clinical delivery of services and advocacy on behalf of mental health, I think we all know that we are the embarrassment of the industrialized world when it comes to how we treat our fellow residents who struggle with mental health. So rather than having you oppose me, I hope we can find ways to work together to address not only the needs at the street level where our first responders are working with those populations, but also work with us to help go upstream to address the issues around housing, around clinical support, around community outreach, around community behavioral health services. These are all, it's not an either or, it's sort of a both and proposition. And I just hope we can find ways to work together on that in the near term and in the years ahead. Let's see, somebody handed me a note. So Andrew Scott, who's our budget director, has to do some house housekeeping?
Housekeeping.
Yeah.
Just really quickly, Mayor. You continued the Prosper Budget Committee to next week. I just want to make sure that we formally convened as the City of Portland Budget Committee and then take the roll one more time because they are two separate bodies.
All right. We are convening as City of Portland Budget Committee. Carl, please call the roll.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman. Udaly.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. We've done it. Perfect. So we will now go into public testimony. 2 minutes each. Folks, I hate to be the microphone cop, so please don't make me do that. 2 minutes goes really fast, so get your biggest points out first. When the yellow light goes on, that means you have 30 seconds left. When the red light comes on, please stop. We find the microphones are really sensitive, so if you keep it about this far away, six inches or so, it tends to work the best. Thanks, everybody, for being here. We really appreciate it.
Okay, so first up, I'm going to read the last three numbers on your ticket stub. 184-062-165. And then on deck in the chairs behind us on the wall, we'll have 071-183-186. These numbers are being read in the auxiliary rooms as well. I'll read them one more time. 184-062-165. And then next, 071-183-186.
And there's a bit of a delay into the overflow rooms, just so you know. So the first people tend to take a little longer.
Would it be good to read another three so that we... Would it be good to read another the next three after that so that people, because it's coming up from downstairs,
sure.
Down from upstairs, can take time too.
Okay, next three, 115-059-122.
Let's just, you've called nine, the first nine in whatever order works for
Anyone
me. Just state your name for the record. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Good evening. Whoever would like to go first?
Sure, I can begin. Okay.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Wheeler and City Commissioners. My name is Adrienne Cato. I am the youth organizer with Opal Environmental Justice Oregon. The Youth Environmental Justice Alliance consists of high school-age youth of color living predominantly in East Portland. They are committed to addressing the inequities that they identify in their communities. One of these inequities that we're seeing currently is the Youth Pass Program. Beginning in 2015, YEJA began a campaign in order to permanently fund the Youth Pass Program and expand the program to East Portland school districts. So the work around Youth Pass has a history of around 21 years. Sisters in Action for Power began the Youth Pass initiative in 1997. So with the advocacy of YEJA, Multnomah Youth Commission, and their allies, they've achieved this expansion into East Portland. This past year alone, approximately 1,300 students in East Portland school districts have received access to free public transportation, getting them to and from school, involved in their communities through volunteering, and allowing them to participate in sports and leadership clubs. While youth have won this victory and we're seeing the results, the Youth Pass Program is still not permanently funded. Young people that are in this room that I organize with are called year after year to come here and talk about why this program is important. It is essential to have Youth Pass permanently funded. We're asking for a transitional year in this next year in order for us to find long-term funding within TriMet. You're increasing the police budget to increase police officers to make more room for community policing, although it is clear to our communities and that and to our young people that police presence does not mean safety. We want to see a fully funded, sustainable Youth Pass program for all youth in Portland, and we need your leadership in this.
Thank you.
My
My name is CJ Felix. I work for Outside In in downtown Portland. So I work with youth who are often affected by mental health. They are homeless, and I, in particular, I work with people who are transitioning off the streets and moving into our transitional housing program, where, you know, our goals are to help them become stable and work towards getting permanent housing, thinking about their goals and dreams, which is something that people are unable to do when they're just surviving day to day and trying to meet their basic needs. So, you know, my passion is really in seeing that people who are the most vulnerable, who have mental health issues, who are homeless, who are queer and trans and people of color, get the services that they need. And, you know, what I've seen from working in social work since 2010 is that the programs that we have now are underfunded. A lot of the time they're understaffed. People are asked to work shifts they don't normally work. They're working overtime. So I'm really interested in seeing the funding go towards these programs that we already have and new ones that could add to the services that we don't have yet. And, you know, I'm interested in how we can come to solutions to help people in a way that's not just adding to a punitive system that a lot of the time puts people more at risk.
I agree with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners, and thank you for the opportunity to speak before you tonight. Mayor Wheeler, you spoke today about record investment, or rather spending, in homeless services. And that's not the first time that we've heard this. In May of 2015, then Mayor Hales, Chair Kefouri, and Mark Jolin, now of the Joint Office of Homeless Services, they got together and they announced a record $33 million in spending that would cut homelessness in half by 2017. We all know what happened with that record investment. What do we got? We've got an increased number of homelessness. We spent over $250 million between the city and county since 2015. We have an extra layer of bureaucracy in the Joint Office of Homeless Services. We have deplorable conditions in our shelters, such as the Human Solutions shelter on Stark that had to be closed down. We've created in the city a homeless industrial complex that spends money to nonprofits and doesn't get help in the hands of the people who need it, who are our houseless. We have a lot of secrecy, some ineptness, a lot of debacles, some very serious lack of due diligence. What do we need? We need some mental health spending. I applaud you on that. We need some addiction services. I applaud you for that. We need some alcohol detox services, and not just alcohol treatment, alcohol detox, medical detox. Absolutely. I know Commissioner Frentz, as a nurse, you would know how dangerous that is. I have the unique opportunity to have been asked to help a friend, and we spent 3 days getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning going to Hooper trying to get him a place to detox before I put it on my credit card and we went out to Tigard and found a place. We need you should be able to walk in for free and say, I need help, and we should be able to provide that. What we don't need is people calling me a NIMBY because I want to be a part of the shelter in my neighborhood. The last person to call me that was you, Mayor Wheeler.
I have never used that
in an
term.
Article,
Excuse
actually.
Excuse me. I have never referred to anybody as a NIMBY. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have to object to that. I have not. You show me the article.
Sure. It was in the Oregonian. It was about 3 weeks ago, and you said, we need people to say, to stop saying, not in my backyard. Well, to me, it means no irresponsible mayor bullying you guys. That's what NIMBY means to me. And you're, Mayor, I've sued you. You might be aware of that because of the secrecy, because you have a list of potential shelter sites, and I fear that you and Joss and the county are placing them in marginalized communities. I fear that in that list that you refuse to lease.
Mayor, we have a lot of people.
Okay. Well, it sounds like we'll argue it out in court.
We already have. It's in the hands of the judges.
But listen, what I said was we can't as a – and I remember because it was in my State of the City speech.
Yes.
Just to be clear, what I said is we can't say that we want to address the homelessness situation and get people off the streets but say no to shelter in our neighborhoods. That's what I said. That is not calling
agree
you a
with
NIMBY.
But
just be clear.
But that term
Thank
is
you.
Used to shut up statements, as you're doing now. It's meant to end a conversation, not to be a part of a conversation. If you wanted me to be part of a conversation,
nothing
you
would
announce
a
December 18th.
Like a lawsuit. All right. Thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Could we have your name for the record, please?
It's Tyler Bechtel.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tyler.
And call some more numbers.
Please.
116-061-083. Folks who are waiting, please come on up. That's you. 147-199-188. And 118-160-113. I'll say those again. 116-061-083. 147-199-188. 118.
If I could also just say, if there are people here who have small children, or if you have a disability that requires you to leave sooner rather than later, please let the acting council clerk know, and we'll work you in sooner rather than later. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening. Hi, my name is Kathy Reese, and I'm a committee member with Friends of Portland Net. The Neighborhood Emergency Team is overseen by the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management, also known as PBEM. Our members are volunteers who will assist during storms to protect the down power lines around the city. We also serve in warming and cooling shelters, and we will respond during major earthquakes. Our members log our hours, and in 2017, the volunteers logged over 58,300 hours, which represents $1.4 million in savings, which is pretty cool. NET members would like to thank Mayor Wheeler and the entire commission for your support of NET and also of PBEM. Your support last year with allowing us to hire extra staff at PBEM has really helped our program, and it's allowed us to have extra training for those who want to become NETs, as well as giving additional training to those of us who already are NET members, and we really thank you for that. Disaster falls hardest on those who are the most vulnerable and have the fewest resources, so we really hope to take our training into schools, neighborhoods, that especially those that are underserved, and communities of faith so that they can better prepare themselves and their families for a disaster. PBEM represents the smallest portion of the city budget, yet when a disaster strikes, PBEM will be one of the most visible on site to help out. We would like to support Mayor Wheeler's proposal for PBEM during 2018-2019. We really thank you for the support, and we look forward to growth for the Bureau as well as for the NET program. And again, we thank you.
Thank you. And, of course, we're always looking for volunteers.
Absolutely.
For the NET program. Thank you. Good afternoon. Good evening.
Hey, good evening. Hello, I'm Susan Bladholm with the Frog Ferry, and I'm here to introduce the concept of a passenger ferry service here in Portland, although, as we all know, it's about a 200-year tradition here, given that's how we typically got away around this community, looking to our native past. Obviously, there are a lot of challenges with surface transportation today, and we need an efficient, low-cost alternative. We're requesting $350,000, which will be matched with other funds, such as with ODOT, that we have lined up, and other public and private sector entities. This has been a one-year effort to date, and we have 180 stakeholders. We have packets that we would like to hand out that outline a number of our supporters. The goal is to create a safe and sustainable river-friendly passenger ferry service to better connect people to people and people again with our river. This is a bold initiative that will take visionary leadership and collaboration. We are looking at 149-passenger, no-car ferry with bicycle storage. The 1.0 version is Vancouver to Portland. We have upwards of 8 potential stops east-west through the river, and that could take us from Vancouver all the way down to Milwaukee, Oregon City, and Lake Oswego. This would be 600 people during commuter times, equating to 400 cars and more than 2 miles of traffic removed from our I-5. This service would serve all walks of life because gridlock does not discriminate. Our model is a public-private partnership, which is shown to be globally in all major river cities that today have a passenger ferry service. And we are looking to your 2006 Willamette River Ferry Feasibility Study. We have studied that extensively, and we meet the requirements: population growth, congestion, travel times, the wake and erosion mitigation. Thank you for your leadership and consideration.
Thank you. It's actually a really interesting concept. I'd like to actually talk more about that. Commissioner Fritz.
So Mayor, I have a question. Do you have in your budget the special appropriation grant fund?
So we have $800,000 remaining in the special appropriation grant fund. We made grants for the Rose Festival, and there was one other. Commissioner Fish, do you remember what it was? Parks Foundation, thank you. So we still have $800,000.
So just so that everybody knows, that we have a process, the mayor has set up a process where there's a fund and there will be a committee that will take applications for anything that's not in the budget that is a kind of a one-time special project that this, I don't know whether this would qualify for it or not, but that will be announced later. And kind of the thinking behind this was that used to be that if you knew somebody on the council and you could get your request in early enough, then you could get your thing funded, and that's not fair because not everybody knows that they could do that. Mm-hmm. And so now Mayor Wheeler has set up this process, so, and that's what people can. So if you're and don't get what you want funded in the budget, that's possibly another avenue to ask.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, my name is Keith Guthrie, and I'm here as a member of the Portland Democratic Socialists of America. Mailer Wheeler's budget proposal uses Portlanders' real needs as a bargaining chip with business interests and grossly misrepresents Portland's priorities. This budget continues the downward trajectory of austerity, cutting funding for parks, community centers, and youth transit passes with no substantial investment in education, preschool, mental health services, or jobs programs, yet providing plenty of funding for more unwanted and unneeded police. We demand a budget that prioritizes the needs of the people to create a city where all can prosper and have their needs met. The mayor's budget proposes an increase in the business income tax from 2.2% to 2.6%. We believe that business tax increases need to be targeted at the top with increasing rates, and we reject the Portland Business Alliance's caveats that this tax is in lieu of a gross receipts tax in the future. We support the Portland Clean Energy Fund that will come to the ballot in November. We refuse to allow the BBA to hold our city hostage with these threats. Corporations will pay as much as we, the people, demand they pay. Additionally, despite the blatant violence and oppression exhibited by the Portland Police Bureau, Mayor Wheeler believes that the problem should be solved with more police, which he believes will cut down 911 response time. What he fails to consider is that a full third of the calls to 911 do not concern criminal activity and should be routed to trained, capable, and fully funded social service options that the city does not currently provide. We already know the devastating results of a poorly trained, over-militarized force. We need to invest in our communities and mental health services, not in the police. As a first step towards supporting the people of Portland, we demand a local income tax on the wealthiest residents of the city. Our tax plan begins reinvesting in our city based on the simple metric, income. Our proposed income tax bracket begins at 2% on income in the excess of $250,000 or $500,000 for joint filers and progresses up to 8% on the income in excess of $1 million or $2 million for joint filers. Renowned economist Mary Kings tells us a conservative estimate of the revenue produced would be approximately $114 million per year. City Council has a choice to make. We hope to see you have the courage to stand up for the whole city of Portland and not just the wealthy few.
And again, I'd encourage people to read the budget statement when it's online. I appreciate your comments. There are actually substantial investments that we make around education, the educational environment, the support of the Sun School program through the parks, scholarship programs for activities for youth. Substantial new investments are included around workforce development with an intentional focus on communities of color and women business owners and entrepreneurs. So I just really encourage people to take a look at that stuff and let us know what you think. Thank you for your comments.
You.
Next three, please.
I'll read some more numbers. 093, 092, 217, 204, 058, 086. and 085-203-070.
Good evening. Would you like to start?
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and City Commissioners. My name is Nia Calloway. I'm a sophomore at Park Rose High School and a member of the Youth Environmental Justice Alliance. I am here today to urge you to include the Youth Pass program and the city budget in the city budget for the 2018-2019 school year, specifically for East Portland school districts. In this implementation year, Youth Pass has benefited almost 1,300 students in East Portland. Your support of Youth Pass is urgent to the youth in the city of Portland. Sisters in Action for Power began this work in 1997. That was before I was even born. We have had to continually come back year after year after year to demonstrate that this program is necessary. If this program is not funded, I will be forced again to figure out how to pay to ride the bus. This past year, I have been able to stay after school to participate in my school's GSA and get involved in making a change in my community through YEJA. We should not have to continually talk about why this program needs to be funded. We urge you to provide transitional funding and support for Youth Pass. Mr. Wheeler, you were at the launch of Youth Pass program in 2015. What happened to your support since then? Is the youth's success not a priority to you? Please show us that this program is essential.
Thank you. And I would like to respond to that because it's a fair question. The last person who testified suggested we have a transition year. I provided a transition year. That was last year. And I was very clear that the city would work with TriMet and the school districts to find ongoing funding for the Youth Pass. It has not happened. And I don't know if it's because people didn't think I was serious or if they didn't feel that it was an urgent need. The Youth Pass will be funded because we have to allow kids a safe route to school. And I am counting on the school districts to step up and fund it as they are legally required under state law to do it. And if they won't, we will back into it through other means. But I think they would probably prefer, as a first strategy, to fund it, as they are required to do under state law. Thank you for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Hello.
Excuse me. Again, folks, please let's just try to be respectful of differences of opinion. You're going to hear lots of them. Let's not hiss. Thumbs down works. Thank you. Sorry.
Hello, my name is Abigail. I'm a community member and a student at Portland State University and the chair of the PSU Young Democratic Socialists of America. First, I'd like to thank City Council for giving me the opportunity to speak this evening. On April 30th, Mayor Ted Wheeler proposed a budget for our city that prioritizes the rich and wealthy businesses' concerns. Mayor Wheeler's budget proposal sacrifices basic services and lacks a prioritization of education systems, child care, mental health services, and jobs programs. As a community, we are demanding a budget that satisfies the needs of all community members and allows them to thrive. I recognize that there has been a proposal for a tax increase on businesses, but it is within the framework that Portland Business Alliance has mandated. This is not good enough. The city's budget is not meant to serve the wealthy few and the businesses of Portland. The budget needs to serve the many. Portland is currently in its wealthiest time of all history, yet income inequality is continually worsening due to a lack of investment in education, city jobs, public housing units, and other resources crucial to the well-being of our community. How can a city flourish if there's no funding for services like Youth Pass? If our population cannot attain an education, families being displaced without replacement. The proposed budget prioritizes graffiti removal and excess increase of police. This is unacceptable and inadmissible. How does Mayor Wheeler justify increasing police force in Portland when there is an ever-increasing violent and oppressive nature of the Portland Police Bureau? We are hiring more police officers, and we reject the notion that services we depend on and we need to be pitted against each other. There is plenty of wealth in this city, and we demand solutions from our leadership, beginning with a high earner income tax on the wealthiest residents that would raise $114 million per year. We are calling on Portland City Council to publicly reject the mayor's proposed budget and insist on a budget that actually takes into consideration the hundreds of people who attended the city budget forums. Commissioner Udaly, at the first budget hearing, you said you weren't opposed to taxing the rich. And Commissioner Fritz, you said you recognize that we need to raise new revenue. We want to hear from where you stand on yet another austerity budget that prioritizes the wealthy over the needs of our city. Thank you.
This is actually not an austerity budget. The problem is, if you look at the numbers, again, look at the numbers when it comes out on the website, you'll see the numbers right at the bottom. Good evening.
Hi, I'm Barb Schwartz. I do not have a prepared statement. I just want to talk with you.
Thank you.
Hopefully not at you. I'm a board member of the Hillside Community Center. I heard your statements earlier this evening that all the community centers will be funded for the next 2 years, but according to Commissioner Fritz, there will be an assessment of basically how valuable the community centers are and which ones will be closed in the next budget cycle. I have lived literally across the street from Hillside for over 40 years. This is the third, maybe the fourth time that Hillside Center has been threatened to be closed. It's inappropriate, especially at this time, you know, this economic time. The figures that you're getting and how much Hillside is being used are highly inaccurate. We heard that there were 400 plus unique users for the year. Well, I would certainly close a facility that was only used that little as well. That's not the case. If you go any time of the day, and your assistant said that you would be happy to come in August, and we will schedule that for you. And
great.
Commissioner Fritz, if you would like to come on a separate time or at the same time, you are more than welcome to come. You will see that it is a thriving, lively community center. We have a preschool that has accepted students that literally have not been accepted any place in the city. We have a child who has a full-time assistant because that's what he needs. That child has no place to go in the city. There's another preschool in the community that is being closed down. If Hillside is threatened as well, it is going to be a disaster. After-school programming, which is coordinated with Chapman School, the kids come directly on the bus. Staff go down and meet the bus and get the kids across the street safely. If that disappears, we're going to have a major disaster. If the building closes, it's going to be a major hindrance to the community and will cause more problems than the $120,000 it might have cost this year to keep it open. The last 2 years, we were self-sufficient.
Yeah, very good. And just to be clear, what I'm looking for is a capital improvement plan and a strategic plan for the community centers. In other words, what are the capital maintenance needs? What are the costs? What kind of things do we need to be thinking about 3, 4, 5, 6 years out
to quickly
and start the process of funding it?
To quickly respond to that, Hillside is part of the I-405 funds, and we get capital fund improvements on a regular basis from them.
Fabulous.
To the tune of about $75,000 maybe every 4 years or so. The budget also included that the center needed $5 million of improvement, of maintenance. When we asked what that was for, we could not get an answer. We have no idea.
Okay. To be continued, and I
to
look forward
continued
to visiting.
For sure.
You bet.
And I'll see you in 2 years if I live that long.
Ms. Schwartz, we're going to... So first of all, I've been to Hillside multiple times. My son's played basketball there, and I know that about I've enjoyed its services.
Come again.
As well. I will, and I'm glad you've invited the mayor. It's not just Hillside, and it's not just the small community centres. We're looking at the whole of what Portland Parks and Recreation does. And
yes, but Hillside's always at the bottom of that list.
No, well, it won't be in this process, so I encourage you to participate. And the funding is ongoing for right now, and the process will be starting very shortly.
Right, but I don't feel assurance that it will continue.
That's fair.
That's my message.
Yeah, that's a fair message. Thank you.
I also have a response.
Commissioner Daly, sorry.
I'm absolutely committed to fighting for everyone to pay their fair share, and we certainly know that large corporations and many wealthy people in our community aren't. That is why I support the Portland Clean Energy Fund, despite threats from big business that they're going to mobilize against me in my next election. I guess they didn't notice that I didn't need their support the first time. but I'm going to ask you guys to come support me in that event. It's also why I supported raising the BLT, although I supported raising it higher than the 0.4% that's been settled on. And I'm definitely interested in the tax that you are suggesting, so set up a meeting with my office and let's start talking.
Good evening. Welcome. Thank you.
Hi. My name is Kim Appleberry of the Fulton Communities Association, and I'd like to thank you for saving Fulton and the other community centers. And my lovely assistant would like to give you a kiss.
Thank you.
Face your liability.
This is
thank
the.
You. That's very kind of you.
The question is how many
back if we don't have times. To get some more community center testimony.
Question is how many times are we going to have to do this? And this is the third time for Fulton. We know it's going to come up again. And as Commissioner Fritz says, we all know that. We need to have a larger conversation. We are simply asking to be part of that. All of the three times up to now, we have been blindsided. We have been surprised by we're going to close it. There seems to have been a strong desire to close Fulton. And it never was backed up by the money. We had proven that over the times. So I'm hoping with new leadership that maybe that mysterious desire to close Fulton will go away. We just asked to be part of the conversation from the beginning. We have solutions. We have smart people. And I have one idea. There is a $55 million excess in SDC income over the next 5 years that PP&R doesn't have a place to put. Now, there seems to be, I am told, there's a gray area about whether that can be spent on capital improvements. And you say, shake your head, well, maybe we need to work at the state level. A community center that is saved is as good as one being opened. If you close Fulton, you lose something. If we can spend some SDCs on the capital improvements needed for long-term success at Fulton, then you have a community center that is otherwise not going to be there. So if we have to go to the state, let's go to the state. We will work with you, if you will work with us, on making this a solution that can apply to other facilities in Park and Rec.
So, Mr. Appleberry, first of all, system development charges or impact fees on construction are to provide capacity where there isn't any. So then we're not allowed to use them for maintenance, and I think the people who don't have any services at all would not support what you just said. That's why we're going to have a community discussion about the funding of Portland Parks and Recreation altogether. So, and that's why I mentioned it tonight, so you won't be blindsided. You're encouraged, and we'll obviously we know who you are, where you are, with your advocacy. You'll be, whoever is the Parks Commissioner, will be inviting the community to participate, and I know you will.
Okay, I appreciate that. We would just want to be part of the conversation, and we can continue about SDCs.
Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Hello, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Dan Jaffe, and I'm Associate Professor of Sociology at Portland State University. I'm speaking tonight on behalf of Julia DeGraw, candidate for Portland City Council, Position 2. Tonight, she's participating in a candidate forum hosted by deaf community groups. She can't be here to deliver this herself. She writes, I'm glad to see that community centers are no longer on the chopping block in this year's budget, but it's unacceptable that working families time and again have to fight to keep our community centers open. I'm also concerned that the mayor is still interested in using our limited resources to hire additional armed police officers. This money should go instead toward much-needed affordable housing and social services. Portland is booming for those at the top, while the rest of us struggle just to make ends meet. This is why I proposed a basic rights and social services tax, or brass tax. The brass tax plan will target the biggest multinational corporations, large developers, and the wealthiest households in a progressive fashion. As profits rise, so too will the obligation owed back to the community that helped that community, that company, or that individual thrive. The brass tax is a revenue plan tied to the funding of much-needed social programs that will benefit all Portlanders, especially those in the most marginalized and historically disadvantaged communities. The programs include citywide tuition-free universal pre-kindergarten, massive expansion of public emergency, transitional, and affordable housing projects, mental health and addiction programs to replace a criminal justice approach to health problems. Some of the changes specifically proposed under the brass tacks are a city income tax with rising rates on the top 10, 5, 2, and 1% of income earners, a citywide luxury tax on extravagant consumer goods and services, improving upon the Novick CEO tax, and exploring a developer linkage fee similar to the one in Seattle. It's time for Portland to finally reject the logic of trickle-down economics. Business-as-usual politics won't cut it anymore. Portlanders want bold change that puts people first. It's time to get down to brass tacks. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Fred Granum, the Executive Director of the James Beard Public Market. We have submitted a request to the city for funding to provide for pre-development funding for the market as we work in collaboration with OMSI to help activate the Central East Side.
When did that request come in?
That came in directly through the mayor's to the mayor's office in the course of that budgeting process. But out of respect of the challenges that the commission faces in dealing with the funding, we recognize that we've been directed and encouraged to go to the special appropriations, and I speak quickly here tonight to recognize that we will do so and respect the challenges that the commission deals with in funding everybody's and the challenges and the projects that we have going on in this city. But with that, I want to underscore that the James Beard Public Market will be designed to be a market for all. It will be a market that we anticipate will be built on the campus at OMSI in collaboration with the programs that OMSI is organizing. We anticipate having 50 to 60 vendors on site. The makeup of those vendors will reflect a diversity of tastes, races, ethnicities within the marketplace, and will provide economic programs for job training within the food industry, as well as educational programs and opportunities for everyone to participate so that everyone in our community is able to come to the public market, feel welcome, and participate, and bring their friends and neighbors to enjoy the bounty of our state. I will relinquish the rest of my time. I simply want to acknowledge our respect for the challenges you face and our commitment to bring this project to fruition in this coming year, as this started back in the 1990s within the halls of the city when Ron Paul started this project. It's now our challenge to bring it into fruition, and we look to your support in the months and years ahead to make it happen.
Yeah. What was the amount that you put in for?
We put in for $200,000 for pre-development expenses for this cycle.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Granum, in addition to the special appropriations process, I want you to know I've also forwarded that to Prosper, since they'll be working with OMSI on the redevelopment.
Yes, your staff reported that, and I appreciate that support. Thank you very much.
Thanks for being here, all three of you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm going to read a few more numbers.
Please.
We have 143-208-108, followed by 084 162 and 151.
Good evening.
Hi. My name is Julia Barron. I've worked in public health for a decade, and I'm also a homeowner in Goose Hollow. And Mayor Wheeler, I appreciate your comments regarding police. I'm here in support of increasing our public safety with more police officers. I reside on the south side of Highway 26 of the Goose Hollow neighborhood, and I am here as a concerned citizen in regards to my safety and that of my neighbors. This area of Goose Hollow is unique. There's only
one
roadway available to come and go from our
homes.
Please
stop interrupting.
Which is via the underpass of Highway 26, also known as the tunnel, and a path to PSU downtown, which originates 10 feet from the south side of the tunnel. Using these routes in the course of our normal daily activities puts our lives in danger. The city encourages walking. Do you live there?
Again, folks, I'm not taking your time. We'll stop the clock. I said right up front that we expect people to treat other people in this chamber with respect. We are all part of the same community, and we do not have to agree on everything. Everybody is entitled to their time at this microphone, and when you interrupt, you are taking other people's ability to speak away from them, and that is fundamentally not fair. Thumbs up if you like it, thumbs down if you don't. Otherwise, leave. Sorry.
Thank you. Using these routes in the course of our normal daily activities puts our lives in danger. The city encourages walking and taking the MAX. This safety concern is in direct conflict of pedestrian-friendly Portland. There are often people loitering in the tunnel, making us feel unsafe, and the need to take the risk of walking down the middle of the road to avoid the danger that coming into direct contact with these loitering people may present. Every week, that tunnel averages 4 to 8 break-ins to vehicles. They come up Mill Street Terrace and break into our cars and homes. The people who loiter in the tunnel leave needles, broken glass, garbage, feces, and urine. Again, I emphasize that this is the only entrance exit from our homes to other vital areas. We need more police to provide us safety and to be able to respond more quickly to this safety hazard. We need not just parking patrols, we need beat cops. We also need clearly marked surveillance cameras for our safety in the tunnel. We need clearly posted no loitering or no overnight sleeping in for our safety. We need pedestrian and driver safety corridors for our safety in Goose Hollow. There's a social contract between the government and its citizens, and this includes protection of all of the city's residents. They can no longer ignore the criminal component of the homeless. We need more police for safety. We need the no camping city ordinance upheld. A person who commits a crime should be held responsible and not be released from jail 2 hours later. Some of the homeless are becoming aggressive, more belligerent, bold, and entitled. This needs to be addressed. I end by saying residents of Goose Hollow do not feel protected nor represented in this problem. We have done our part and are requesting that you now listen and do your part to act. I urge city council members, as our elected representatives, to immediately act immediately. Provide more police, enforcing existing ordinances, provide proper surveillance, proper lighting, and no loitering signage in identified areas of concern.
Thank you.
Make us feel safe again.
Wrap it up, please. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Ms. Barron, I really appreciate your courage in speaking up. Thank you. And I'm sorry for the treatment that you've had.
It's all right. Our safety is a daily concern. Like, even walking, I can't walk on the sidewalk.
As you were speaking, I could imagine walking through that tunnel. And that's the only...
I'm sorry, I can't hear.
As you were speaking, I could imagine walking through that tunnel, and it sounds like that's the only access in and out of your home.
There's glass. There's glass everywhere. There's needles everywhere. It smells of urine. And again, this is the only access that we have. The mm-hmm. only access.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate
you. I'd also like to add that the hissing is really unappreciated.
I have asked security to start asking people to leave.
It's really disappointing to me to have a woman sitting in front of us, regardless of whether or not I agree with what she thinks the remedy is to the problem, but a woman that feels unsafe in our community. As a woman that grew up here and has walked down these city streets, I can tell you I've been harassed and assaulted on multiple occasions, and it's not unreasonable for her to come here and share her experience and her concerns. So please just stop with the hissing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Good evening.
Good evening. My name's Liz. I'm the Community Wellness Coordinator for the Rosewood Initiative, and I'm here tonight on behalf of the East Portland Neighborhood Office. I'm a lifelong resident of East Portland, and I'm very familiar with how our community has been neglected due to a lack of equitable funding and resources from the city. Over the years, I've seen little improvement in the extreme displacement of the Portland community, which has caused a concentration of poverty, rampant food insecurity, and has increased preventable health and safety hazards in East Portland. EPNO, the East Portland Neighborhood Office, has gone above and beyond to help give a voice to all of us in East Portland and bridge our community members to resources, and not just for the homeowners who prescribe to the neighborhood associations. At the Rosewood Initiative, we were fortunate enough to receive one of EPNO's small grants to celebrate Mental Health Awareness Month. EPNO's grants provide strong and life-changing impacts for our community members. In the last 10 days, we have already served over 200 of our Rosewood community members, including 150 at our health fair, where they connected to needed health services and completed on-the-spot screenings. 22 leaders within our Spanish-speaking community became certified in mental health first aid, equipping them to help others in crisis. 12 of our Guerreras Latinas learned about the importance of self-care. 9 renters learned how to protect themselves from predatory landlords, and 8 parents learned how to support their teens' mental health. Without EPNO, none of this would have been possible. Because of this, I'm asking for the following 3 items. The first, provide equitable funding to EPNO by increasing their budget by $201,980. Increasing their funding will allow them to increase their capacity to support community groups in East Portland so that youth, people of color, and new community groups in East Portland have access to needed funding. The second, support the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability's request for a one-time funding of $135,000 to begin an East Portland quadrant plan similar to the Southwest Equitable Housing Strategy. And the final one, establish a 0.5% in city overhead funding to secure monies for each bureau so that they can actively fund interpretation, translation, child care, and other accommodations to support equitable engagement in the City of Portland's decision-making.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank
colleagues,
you.
I just want to point out, this is Liz who helped craft the proclamation, the wonderful proclamation we had on that Wednesday morning. This is the woman who basically wrote it, and she's single-handedly put on that fair that had those amazing results. So thank you very much for your leadership.
Thank you.
Well done. Thank you.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hi. I'm Elizabeth Spanbauer, and thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for having me. I am a small business owner and an entrepreneur and just a mom representing Hillside Community Center, and my sons go there. I'm aware of the budget change for Hillside, and I'm very thankful for this. I hope this council will approve it so Hillside funding will continue. Hillside is so important to me and my family as well. As a surrounding community. Hillside Community Center is a place I found when I was desperately needing a place for my autistic son, Enzo, as well as my other son, Milo, to go there for after school. Not just so I can work, but for the interaction with other peers. The people there were so great. Hillside offered us so many things that other centers do not. Enzo needs a full-time aide, and Hillside has that. In fact, his aide is also now his care provider part-time at home. He also goes to all the summer camps. It is important to be a part of a place that keeps him engaged through the summer so that transition to school into fall seems a lot less stressful for him. Hillside gave my son, Enzo, a chance to interact with other kids with special needs. His best friend, Neil, goes there too, and they have so much fun together. I'm hoping Hillside is around for many more years to come. Me as a mother depends on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All three of you, thank you for your testimony.
I'm going to read some more numbers. And when you come in, you can just line up in the back by the chairs. You don't have to come up here. The numbers are 142, 111, 194, and 146, 102, 202.
Good evening.
Hello, good evening. My name is Alexis Moyer. I'm 19 years old and the co-chair of the Multnomah Youth Commission, or MYC's Sustainability Committee. We're here today because the mayor's budget does not have youth pass written into it. We are disappointed to say that Portland Public Schools has already committed to filling in the gap for youth pass, even as they struggle to receive adequate state funding. PBS has an advantage in that they get reimbursed from the state for opting out of yellow buses, which is possible because of the transit investment in Portland as opposed to East Portland. Portland has a history of disinvestment from East County. Mayor, you have the power to change this and invest in East Portland youth. The nearly 4,000 youth who go to David Douglas and Park Rose deserve this program, which would cost approximately $600,000 and would cover all students for the transitional year, as opposed to last year where only partial students were able to receive the bus pass. This is not a lot of money compared to the individual impact that this program has on youth. This sets up youth to succeed. It costs, as you know, it costs more to build future shelters, to hire more cops, and other intervention efforts. Mayor, in your budget, you valued housing funding to get houseless, struggling people resources they need to stay off the streets. Youth Pass is that resource. There are youth surviving off this program that are at risk of being houseless and youth not counted under the Title 10 McKinney-Vento Homeless Assistance Act who are currently houseless. I have organized with the Sustainability Committee for 4 years to keep this program. It has been frustrating that we have to come back every year and exemplify our time and resources when we have developed policy recommendations that address issues like youth safety at bus stops, around policing, like CHIMA ensuring that bus drivers and fare ticketers are trained in racial and cultural competency. Let me say it again. I have organized for 4 years for Youth Pass while I have been followed home, harassed on the max, at bus stops, while I've been threatened, while I've seen youth of color being targeted for so many things. There are many problems that youth of color, queer youth, poor youth face in the community that we are unable to address because we are stuck every year advocating for the minimum to even gain access to our city. Council members, last year you committed to directing the Portland Bureau of Transportation to study the cost of this program. You did not. You committed to bringing TriMet officials with power to the table with us, and you did not. You committed to working with us to find sustainable funding for Youth Pass, and you did not do that either until it was too late in the game. And now you are pulling the rug from under East County youth.
All right, thank you. Good evening.
Hi, my name is John Sherman, and I'm here on behalf of Transition Projects. I'd like to personally thank all of you for your continued work in our community. As a result of your investment in a home for everyone and in the work